Chapter 4. The Five-Legged Dog. The five-legged dog was in the low end of town, or stated another way, it was at the southern point. The south end of Plotzdorf was the rough end, a place I usually tried to avoid. I was used to rough places, spent my whole life in rough places. I came to Plotzdorf to escape the rough places and avoided trips to the south end as much as I could. Part of the joy of those trips was the process of inflicting myself on the rich, of getting my filth on the chosen few, and there was joy in knowing they would not turn me away. I held their greed hostage in my purse, and it was delicious. Having to walk to the low end was awful. It was a betrayal of a cherished fantasy, a splash of cold water to the face, a kick to the balls. For Godon, I was well aware of my station in the world, but having to swallow such a reminder just seemed cruel and excessive. The south end of town was the poor district because of the direction in which the Ruhr flowed. It was a north-to-south river, coursing through Plotzdorf from the northernmost point to the most southern tip. The water was much cleaner at the north end of town, about as clean as you could hope for, given there wasn't anything as big as Plotzdorf further north. There were smaller villages and such, like mine, which was so minimal we hadn't even bothered to name it. But these spread out over the landscape, and we had not grown so large that we could not manage our filth. And once you grow to the size of a town, and especially when you grow as great as a city, the produced filth outruns the people's ability to recover from themselves, and pretty soon they're fighting a constant losing battle against a slow-moving, muddy brown tide. The water on the north end of town was quite clean, so this was where all rich lived. The most successful merchants, horse breeders, officials, the mayor, and so on. If the town had a resident noble, he would have been on the north end as well. There were no nobles in that town, though, praise be given. The rich were bad enough. Nobles were in their own category. The rich at the north end of town, then, dumping their daily shit into the Ruhr, where it floated away to the low end. Every day, the rich feeding their shit and piss to the poor. Nobody drank water on the low end of town, not from the Ruhr. They kept rain barrels out, and if Thunair sent rain, there was water to drink. Otherwise, they lived off beer and cheap mixed wine. It was late when I found the dog, but the oil lantern hanging by the door made the sign easy to spot. There was no writing, as most of the folk who frequented the joint could not read. I know I couldn't read at the time, but the picture on the sign was pretty evident. It was a great hound, reared back on his hind legs, with a cock as long as a man's arm thrust out proudly, like a javelin. The five-legged dog. There were no guards stationed by the door. I went in. The inside of the dog smelled about like what I'd imagined the inside of a real dog would smell, and because I'm a polite man, I think I'll refrain from describing it here. It was the opposite of the aroma you encountered in the Blossom, in just about every possible way, and that's all anyone should ever be forced to say on the matter. It was dark inside, with just a few guttering candles scattered over the tabletops. Men dressed shabbily, as shabby as me, dotted the room, and a few whores were there as well, but they were less about entertaining the patrons than I would have liked. Mostly, they just lounged around, as boneless as the drunks. One of them leaned against the far wall with her skirts hiked all the way up to her waist and fanning her snatch with a slate board. I got a glimpse as I passed by. The damned thing looked as hairy and matted as a sheep's ass. She caught me looking as I passed, smiled at me, and spread her knees wider. I looked away fast and made damn sure I didn't look anywhere near her direction again for the rest of the night. The bar was stationed along the rear of the common room. I use the word bar charitably here, as it seemed to be composed of some wooden planks laid across sawhorses, with a long strip of sail canvas nailed to the edge and hanging over the front to disguise the fact that it was wooden planks laid across sawhorses. A few vagrants stood at the board, but most perched precariously on stools fighting a losing battle against passing out. They nursed their drinks slowly, abysmally slow, and I understood these men had no homes, that they slept in the gutter, and that they sipped minimally at their drinks now because they could not stay unless they were drinking and could not afford more than a single drink. One of them nodded, jerked, and slapped himself across the face. So they weren't allowed to pass out then, or someone would come along and pitch them into the street. I took a stool at the center of the bar, where there was the widest gap of empty space, and the publican set a clay mug down on the board. I glanced inside, saw a liquid so black it looked like tilled soil, and asked, "What if I'd wanted something else?" "Better head somewhere else, then. That's all we have at the Dog," he said. I nodded, felt around in my purse, fingered aside a few bits, and pulled out a fatter mark. I laid it down on the board and pushed it across. I knew it was a mistake as soon as I'd done it. I could feel the eyes of every other lowlife around the bar piling on my hand like flies on shit. I was still thinking like a man in the blossom, where a hole mark was perhaps enough to get a woman to hold your hand, and that was it. Here, though. "That enough to keep me going a while?" I asked. The barkeep nodded. "Keeps you going all night if you pace yourself." "Well, your job is to make sure I never see the bottom of this mug. Do that and there's a handsome tip with your name on it, delivered with love from me to you. And I'm not the kind to pace myself, so you'll want to limber up." He showed me a few green, broken teeth and floated away. I decided to test his ability to follow instructions and pulled the first tankard down in a single swallow, tilting way back and closing my eyes so I could concentrate on that thick, warm medicine running down my gullet. I tasted better in my time, but anything tastes lovely after a full day of abstinence, and then after you threw back two or three, you didn't care so much about the taste anymore. You didn't mind the taste if your head stopped pounding and your hands stopped shaking. I leaned forward with a gasp and a smile, and when I opened my eyes, I saw a full pint sitting in front of me on the board. The barkeep was still at the other end of the bar, so I figured he must have either been a master of stealth or some sort of magician. I put the empty tankard down, picked up the new one, and nodded at the man to let him know I was impressed. He gave me that ugly smile again. I wondered if he smiled that way for everyone, or if it was reserved only for the people he proposed to fuck. I looked away and took a sip of my new drink, slower now, as I'd already proven my point. I had, perhaps, a few moments of peace at best before someone came to sit on the stool next to me. I shrugged away from him on raw instinct. He smelled of water scum, and his appearance was nothing to recommend his presence. It is true that I was a man who seldom bathed or groomed, and my clothes were ragged, though I patched the holes with scraps of leather, which at least showed I made an effort. This man occupied his own realm. If dog shit could shit, it would come out looking and smelling like this man. I wanted to tell him to fuck off, but people like him almost always look at such invitations as a request to strike up a conversation. I did my best to ignore him and continued to drink, but it was damned hard to pretend he wasn't there. He breathed loudly, and the sound of his breath rattled in his chest as if he was dying. One or two drinks later, he spoke.
"Buy me a drink," he said.
"Can't."
"Why not?"
"I don't want to fuck you."
"Buy me a drink anyway."
"Why should I?"
"I have secret knowledge. I'll share it with you if you buy me a drink, and you'll thank me when I do. It'll save you money and get you laid for free."
I forced myself to look at him. It seemed to me the only secret knowledge he possessed was that he'd figured out how to transform himself into a walking affront to the gods. His very existence was an insult to Ing, as if he'd taken all her hard work and smeared it with the worst filth he could find and set it aflame. Still, he was transitioning slowly from hideous to curious, and I wondered if he might not continue on to amusing. A place like the Dog never hired a musician, so this was probably as close as I'd get to some entertainment before picking a woman. I put a bit down on the board and nodded to the barkeep. He put a tankard in front of my new friend, looked at me, and shook his head, which caught my attention. I said, "Well, then why didn't you warn me before I agreed?" The barkeep held up the bid I'd given him and shrugged. "Asshole," I called after him, and he laughed. I was beginning to like him. The thing sitting next to me began to drink, and after a while I thought maybe he wouldn't share any of his secret knowledge with me. I thought that was all right. Maybe I'd just purchased his silence for a bit, which seemed an outstanding price. And if he didn't eventually shove off, I could just get up and move a few stools over. I took a drink myself, satisfied at how events were playing out. But then the thing next to me spoke again and dashed my hopes against the rocks.
"My name is Gumpert," he said.
"All right. I'm a fisherman." "Great. Gumpert, the fisherman. I've learned new things here, but nothing that promises to save me money or otherwise improve my situation. I'm starting to feel as if I've been screwed, Gumpert."
"No, I'm not screwing you. I'm going to tell you how to screw."
I looked at him. He seemed serious, but it was hard for me to believe what he'd said. "You're going to teach me how to screw?"
"No, not teach. That's on you if you don't know how to do the job."
"Oh, naturally."
"Naturally,"
he agreed.
"You wouldn't be at the Dog unless you wanted to lay. A man could drink anywhere in this town, especially with the money you're carrying, and drink better than the swill in this place."
"What do you know about my money?" I asked. He was making me nervous. I wondered if he was setting up to rob me later.
"I know you're going to thank me when I tell you how to get laid without spending it."
"Oh, this'll be good."
"You bet your ass. What did you say your name is?"
"My name is Hurry It the Fuck Up," I sighed.
"Well, you must be quite popular with the ladies."
"Listen, you bastard."
"Okay, okay, moving along then. I'm a fisherman, as it happens."
"Oh, you don't say."
"And I've learned many things about some of the fish that swim down the Ruhr."
I rested my chin in my hand. I had a feeling I was about to be taken on a long, unrewarding journey. When he said nothing more, I began to hope again that it was over, but then the barkeep spoke up.
"I don't think he's going to bite, Gumpert. You'd better just say it outright."
"I suppose,"
Gumpert said. He took another drink and said,
"It so happens, Mr. Hurry It the Fuck Up, that there is a special fish that lives in the Ruhr. A very special fish. It's easy to spot, being bright gold and about an L long. But these are not the important details. The important thing about this fish, the best thing actually, is that it has no teeth."
"Listen, Gumpert. Where is this going? I'm on a critical mission to get as drunk as I possibly can here, and you're really ruining it, man."
"Okay, okay. Just stay a while. This fish is about an L long, and so is the gullet that runs through it. And it doesn't have any teeth."
"No teeth." I turned slowly on the stool and looked at him. "What?"
"They have as much slime on the inside as the outside. It feels nearly like the real thing once you get past the cold."
I came off the stool and backed away from Gumpert by 2 or 3 paces. "What in all of Erda is wrong with you?" I shouted. I heard a snort from behind the board, and then the barkeep said,
"Tell him what the fish is called, Gumpert."
Gumpert took another pull from his tankard and said,
"I call it the golden cocksucker."
Everyone around the bar burst out in laughter, panicked, wheezing wails of laughter that shook the thin wooden walls and startled half of the patrons spread out among the tables. Gumpert just smirked and took another drink. "The shit. You're having a go at me," I said. Gumpert grinned, finished his drink, and excused himself from the bar. He strolled through the common room, bowing occasionally to some of the other patrons as he went, and exited. I sat back down at the bar and said, "Son of a bitch was having a go." Then I looked at the barkeep and said, "You might have warned me, ass."
"Warned you of what?"
"That the bastard was having me on."
"Oh, he wasn't. That's Gumpert the fish fucker. The watch has caught him at it a few times now. They run him out of town whenever they catch him, but he always manages to find his way back in. It's been a while since the last time, though. so I guess he must be abusing the fish out in the woods.
I was back to being horrified. And you let that thing in here, huh?
Well, it's fun to watch him con the irregulars out of a drink, he laughed.
That's about as low class as it gets, I grumbled.
Must be why you're in here.
I said nothing to that, and I guess he started to be worried about his tip because he pushed another full tankard in front of me and said, Here, chap, no hard feelings, eh? This one's free. Fine, I muttered, and set to work. After a few more rounds, I started to feel better about the situation. I could see the humor in it, in a detached way, and was forced to admit I would have laughed just as hard if I'd seen Gumpert screw someone else out of a drink with that lay. After that, I laughed anyway, and decided I'd been entertained as much as everyone else, and that the cost of a drink had been a fair price. I started feeling better about Gumpert, though I had no plans to be friendly toward him if we ever met again. The man was a fish fucker, after all. My mind and teeth started to buzz, and I started thinking I'd drunk up enough courage. So I looked around the common room for a likely whore. When I found one that looked nice, I nodded at her and beckoned her over. Then she sat down beside me, and I got a good look at her in the candlelight, and discovered either that the room was darker than I'd thought or that I'd drunk enough to impair my vision. What's your name, love?
Thana,
she lisped. I noted she was missing most of her teeth. I thought for a moment that this might not be a bad thing, but then I was reminded of Gumpert and his depravity and shivered. That's a lovely name, I said. Try not to smile, though.
All right.
I was quiet a moment. Then, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No, it's not. A lot of people have a hard time with their teeth, love. There's nothing wrong with you. It's not like I'm any fine specimen.
You look all right.
Please don't do that. I haven't paid you yet, so there's no reason to do that.
I'm not jobbing you. You look nice. I like your eyes. They're kind.
They are not. Quit saying that shit. You're throwing me off.
You don't like people being nice to you?
Nobody's nice to me. I want to like you, Sana. Quit saying that shit. It's making it hard to like you.
All right. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. You're all right. You look all right, too. Just, hell, have a drink, can't you? I waved the barkeep over and pointed at her. Many of the others around the bar froze when I did, and I even saw some of the other whores glare at Sana. She took a drink and smiled broadly, using one hand to shield her mouth. What an Erda just happened there.
No one ever buys us whores a drink, she whispered.
Low lives, I muttered.
What are you doing here, in this kind of a place?
She asked. She sounded genuine. I do not know.
You still want me?
I took a drink. I sure intend to try. She smiled again, still hiding her mouth behind a hand.
Well, there's different rates depending on what you want, but since you bought me a drink, you can put it anywhere for the normal price.
Anywhere, huh?
Sure. It's all the same to me.
I thought about her lack of teeth again. Well, I guess it's all the same to me, too. Which gets you the most money?
Well, none of them. They're all the same, like I said.
I mean under normal circumstances. Assuming a client hasn't given you a drink, what gets the most money?
Oh, right. My ass.
Fine, then. Tonight I'll pay you an asshole price to take the road most traveled.
Oh, mister. That's really nice, but you don't have to.
You kick a percentage to the house? I asked. She hesitated and glanced at the barkeep, who very pointedly ignored us. I already knew the answer without her saying anything. Okay, don't answer that, I whispered. So, knowing what I know, I'll guess the house keeps most of it. What do you keep? 2 bits out of every 10? I read her face and nodded. Less, huh? Do they let you keep your tips? She looked down at her knees and nodded. Sana? She looked up at me again. Really?
Yeah. We never get tips, so they let us keep them.
I nodded and whispered back. Sorry for being so loud about paying an ass price then. I didn't know the arrangement around here.
It's all right.
Finish that drink and let's go back to your room.
All right.
Her room was about the size of a closet at the Flower. There was enough space for a filthy bed so narrow that the only way two people could share it is if they laid on top of each other, which I guess was kind of the point. It was dark when she let me in, but she took a candle from a gnarled tree-stump table in the corner and lit it from a lantern in the hall. Then she shut the door, wedged it back with a block of wood, and sat at the foot of the bed. Okay, Sana, how much do you get for the ass?
12 bits.
I nodded and dug around in my purse. Fine. There's 12 bits to cover the conversation that barkeep overheard, and I dug around some more. Here is your tip. Her mouth dropped open.
That's 2 whole marks.
You have somewhere to hide that? She nodded slowly, as if someone had knocked her senseless. Good. If that pimp out there tries to cut in on your tip, don't try to hold out on him, or he'll know to toss your room. Give up a mark to him, and that should satisfy. He'd never believe I tipped you, too.
Thank you,
she whispered. I'd probably just handed her 2 months' wages. Her gratitude was plain, and it made me feel miserable. All right, knock it off. Let's have that dress off and get to it. I started to get nervous. I never did so well with the low-end girls for some reason. They were always so damn pathetic, and I never felt like I could use them the way I had to. Honestly, I was starting to worry about being able to rise to the occasion. Then her dress came off, and I saw she had a pretty body. She was underfed, though, and I could count the ribs like they were stair steps. The bones of her hips stood up like mountain peaks, but her breasts were small and firm, and I liked them on her for some reason. They seemed to suit her, standing straight up the way they did. And looking at her stretched out on the bed, I felt my cock begin to lengthen out like a tree branch. Okay, I muttered. Maybe this works out after all.
What's that?
Nothing. Be quiet. I got on her, being very careful not to put too much weight down for fear of snapping a bone. Tried to enter and found her not quite ready to dance.
I'm sorry, she whispered.
No, it's fine. I said to be quiet. She pushed me back a bit, did the things it was necessary to do in order to be ready, and pulled me back in. She was underfed, had lost most of her teeth, and her ribs stood out like a staircase. But inside she felt as all women did, and it seemed for a little while like it would all work out. I began to pump away at her, and it was very good at first, but then after a while it felt like less, and then soon enough it felt like nothing at all. I began to worry, and things only got worse from there. I tried shifting position, adjusting my stroke, angling my hips so that I could grind against her insides harder, and it all felt the same. I tried going fast, going slow, tried pulling out slowly so that I fell out of her, and then went back in so it would feel like new again. But it didn't. I tried coming at her from every angle, and none of it was any good. No good at all, so that after a while I started thinking that maybe the ass was the way to go. But I didn't want to take that from her, not after paying so much. I wanted her to have as much of it for free as I could manage, and going that other way felt to me like it would have been theft. She kept looking up at me expectantly, those huge brown eyes, and it really started to fuck up my rhythm. They reminded me of Ambrosius, my donkey, and it was very distracting. Close your eyes. Don't look at me, I grunted. She closed them, and I pushed her face away so she would be looking at the wall if they opened again. I kept at it, and it only got worse as I tried harder. My mind started to wander despite my best efforts to keep it on task, and I started to lose track of time. I don't know how long I was at it before she whispered,
Hey, mister, you've got to finish up soon, okay? They don't like us taking so long.
I know, shut up, can't you? I pleaded. It still wasn't any good. After a while, I thought it might help if I just pretended like I was at the Flower. Still thrusting, now dripping sweat on the poor girl, I put my right hand around her throat and squeezed a little, almost like a test. I felt my heart lurch in my chest when I did this, almost as if the whole world had been drawn into focus. But then her eyes snapped open and I saw she was frightened, and it all died down to a cold numbness again. I yanked my hand away and said, "Sorry." She took my hand and placed it back over her throat and said,
"It's okay. We can do that if that's what you need."
"No, we'd better not."
"It's okay, I mean it."
I started to squeeze again, but now she seemed so eager to please that it wasn't working for me. Wasn't working now for entirely new reasons. I felt her hips driving against mine, and that was nothing special either. I sighed and was on the verge of giving up again, but then she closed her eyes, and that helped a little. Then, as I drove into her, I started thinking about the flower again, about Gerlin, and how it was between us. I started to come around. Thinking about Gerlin, or maybe not thinking at all, I lifted up my hand and aimed for the side of her face. Then her eyes opened again, looked right up at me, and I saw my own eyes reflected back. My eyes, and the eyes of Stavka's son, and the other apprentices with whom I roomed as a boy, and the cold eyes of our master smith Mathis. I saw her terror as she looked up in my hand, saw my own terror swimming within, and I fell away against the wall, panting.
"It's okay. It's okay," she gasped.
She was also panting.
"You can do it if that's what you need."
There were tears running down her cheeks then, and I wanted to die. "It's okay," I said, gathering my britches back up. "I'm done. I'm all done. You were great, honestly. It's all right."
"You didn't finish," she said. "I would have felt it. We can tell, you know."
"I'm done," I said. "I'm all finished."
"Hell if you are."
"I am."
"Let's have some proof, then."
"Do what?"
"I can't let you out of here like this. If word gets out, I'll be ruined."
"Lady, trust me, word won't get out. I'm not likely to brag about this around town."
"Let me see. I want some proof. Let me see a drip and I'll believe it."
"Lady, for the love of Godon and Ing, Tyr and fucking Frigg, leave it alone already. I'm done. It's over, and you're absolved."
"I'm not going to just..."
"Get the fuck out of here," I screamed. I grabbed her by the arm, threw the wadded-up dress at her, and booted her in that bony ass as I shoved her through the door.